But God takes us where we're at, right? Whatever we're willing to deal with, the deck of cards that we got in our hands, he'll deal with us. And so, by the time we got it fixed, that airplane spent a lot of time here at Andrews Air Park. I mean, I think the students put in nearly 1,000 hours of labor on that thing, volunteering, and some of it paid, some volunteer. And they finally got it fixed up, new engine, new radios, new brakes, new tires, the paint job we did in Kentucky. We got everything going, and it was all ready to go, and we took it overseas, and we started flying nearly 1,000 hours a year. That's when you fly that many hours, you're all day in the air. Now, it averages out to about 3 hours a day, but that's because you don't fly every day. But when you fly, it's from 6 in the morning to 6 in the evening. And, of course, even if you fly all day long, you're hopping and stopping and going and coming. You don't actually fly 12 hours. You spend about 5 or 6 hours in the air, but you're 12 hours at work. And I used to take off right at sunup and land right at sundown, day after day after day after day. And patients, complicated pregnancies, accidents, a chainsaw accident, malaria patients, two drunks got, you know, fighting, cutting each other up, whatever the thing is, picking them up, taking them to the hospital, and things started changing. The whole environment. This little airplane was like a constant presence. One guy told me, "You're just like the Holy Spirit, you're everywhere." In the same day, boom, 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 you know. And they never had this kind of presence before, and just like an angel of mercy. I remember one village called Philippi that they've told me that years before, we'd send several choirs of young people there to sing. They got driven out of the village with stones and rocks. And then they called me and said, "We have a lady that her children brought her out in a hammock. She's dying of malaria. Could you come pick her up?" Well, when I got there, I could just see a mulling. And I came. They loaded her into the airplane. I checked her. She was very bad. It's gone quite a bit. She lived further into the interior. I took her to the hospital where she died 2 days later. I went by the hospital and I asked the doctor, I said, "What are you planning to do? We're going to bury her right here." I said, "But what? She has 5 children." "Well, you can imagine if we took her upriver, it's 3 days by river in this heat. How do you take a dead person home, you know, a body in the heat for 3 days? We could never do it. She's going to be buried here." I said, "But the children will never be able to say goodbye to their mother." "Well, what choice do we have?" I said, I'll take her in the airplane. I'll take her back." Well, they wrapped her up in a sheet and they put her in the airplane and they called ahead by radio and they had the family waiting. They tried to put a coffin together, but they didn't quite get enough time. They did it later, but while the carpenter was rapidly putting a coffin together, at least they brought out a big piece of zinc roofing with two poles underneath it, and they laid her body there. And I watched the little kids say goodbye to their mommy. And then they brought the coffin, they put her in, and all the family kissed her goodbye, and then they nailed the coffin lid on. And then they lowered her down to bury her, and the local church pastor from that denomination, a lady, began to do the service, and then she stopped. And I was going to go. I was in a hurry, but the Holy Spirit impressed me to stay there. And I just stood, and I attended the service. And she stopped, and she said, "Elder, would you do the service?" And I told him about Jesus' soon return. But the hope, she was a Christian, but the hope that we have to see our loved ones again, as soon, very soon, the angel will come and the trumpet will sound and we can be with our parents. But the responsibility of those of us that live is to be ready for the coming. After everything was done, there was a different tone in that village. The captain came to me and said, "Could you come meet with our village council next week?" I came back and they allocated us a beautiful piece of property, and today we have a beautiful church in that village. Why? One single act of love. Just one. What, do you care enough that a dead mother can come back and her children can say goodbye to her? That's really what it was. I didn't even get to save her life. But it was the idea of showing the love that opened up all the doors. And that's what's been happening all over Guyana, everywhere. Today we have 2 airplanes flying. We never had permission there. No aircraft has been given permission to fly for 30 years on a permanent basis nationwide except our aircraft. No other organization has been given permission. We're the only organization. We have a monopoly in Guyana to this day. I love monopolies just like Bill Gates does, my cousin. And different monopolies. I love it when God's people have monopolies. I love it when you're the first one there. I love it when you have the majority of visibility and influence. I love it when God gets first place before the enemy. I love it when a television station gets in there before there's any other television stations, because there's only one station on the air. Before the devil gets in. Before DirecTV gets in. But you have to move fast. And God expects His people to move fast. Did you know that opportunity is what God gives? He doesn't give success. God gives opportunities. Success depends on how do you utilize them. And most of us are faced with opportunities. Page 133 and 134 of Gospel Workers will tell you that God expects us to move at the golden moment when opportunity is there. In fact, Sister White said, I was shown that the greatest victories and the greatest defeats are on the turn of minutes. Minutes!